Before we get into today's Wiggle Room, let me take a moment and tell you that this podcast is sponsored by the Samsung Flex Wash and Flex Dry Pair from the Home Depot. Talk about a final two. Talk about a pair that you can't break up. These innovative appliances are the first ever to allow you to wash two loads and dry two loads of laundry at the same time in the same machine. So when you do your laundry, you don't need to mix different colors and fabrics together, risking color transfer or fabric damage. Flex Wash integrates a large capacity lower washer for everyday washes and an additional washer for separate colors or delicates. Flex Dry integrates a large tumble dryer for everyday items and a flat dryer for delicates. Both the washer and dryer have a number of innovative features to make doing laundry easier on you and your clothes. And the Flex Wash offers steam wash options for removing stains but self-clean to keep the washer odor-free. Flex Dry features multi-steam to steam away odors and wrinkles, while Sensor Dry optimizes drying temperatures to avoid damage to your clothes. Both are Wi-Fi connected, allowing you to set and start the machine and receive an alert when your load is finished. Together, the Flex Wash and Flex Dry offer the ultimate flexibility to provide the best possible care for your clothes. That's the Flex Wash and Flex Dry from Samsung, available at Home Depot.
I don't have it.
Check it out.
Josh.
Wiggle, 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 wiggle.
Lur.
Wiggle, 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 wiggle.
Lur.
Wiggle, 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 wiggle.
Lur.
Wiggle, 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 wiggle.
Lur.
Yeah.
A little wiggle, man.
What is going on, Josh Wiggler?
Oh, my God. Yes, in the studio.
Okay, so, Josh, I just watched you do the wiggle dance.
A standing wiggle dance.
A standing wiggle dance, and I've never seen that before. I've always seen you sitting.
Yeah.
But what I've realized is that the wiggle dance, I don't know if this is intentional or not, but you are basically, you are making the shape of a W.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, my arms stick out. My head is like the middle of the W.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good look, right?
Well, I feel like that you're not so much like a goalpost like this. I feel like your arms are sort of like a 45 degree a 45 degree angle, and then you're sort of making the W.
You know, I think that might be the first time that I ever did the wiggle dance like that. But maybe now we have it nailed down. Too bad we don't have video of it.
Yes, I didn't have my phone in front of me.
All right. Well, if you ever catch me live in person, ask me to repeat the wiggle dance that just commenced here.
Well, here you are. You are dancing. You are ready to be fist pumping because it's Survivor Finale Week.
Survivor Finale Week, yes.
In Los Angeles.
Yes, as has become tradition. I always come out for the Survivor Finale. We always do a final wiggle room in person before the finale. We do our voicemail show after the finale as well. So we're going to get a lot of hang time in this week, Rob. Also,
we're
making some history right now. We've never had, I don't think, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think that, you know, aside from the exclusives and whatever, we've never had a guest in the Wiggle Room. We've never had anyone other than you and I in the Wiggle Room before.
That's correct.
We're making history right now because we have our very first. It's the final three. We went from final two to final three. We have our third person here. And I think that if there was ever going to be a first guest in the Wiggle Room, this was definitely the guy that it should be. Somebody who is, I would say, you know, outside of you, Rob, my best friend in the room at the moment. Somebody who gets a lot of play here. Please welcome Nick Majorano.
Hi.
No, it's not Nick Majorano. It's not Nick Majorano. It's Kevin Mahadeo.
Hello.
Who has appeared on post-show recaps many times in the past.
Thanks for that intro. I wish I could have done a better Nick impersonation.
No, I
cannot.
What's a Nick impersonation?
I don't know. Yeah.
You just like stand there and be like, I'm cute. I've got muscles.
Yeah.
Those are both accurate things about Nick.
I suck. Just kidding. I love you, Nick. So we've got Kevin Mahadeo here. Kevin, who many of you know, is my West Coast family. Whenever I come out here, I'm staying with Kevin Mahadeo. So
yes, he is our third roommate.
I'm the third roommate over there, and so now we've got the third roommate in the Wiggle Room at the moment. The third Wiggle roommate.
Yes.
Okay, so a pleasure to have you here. First time in the studio for Kevin, of course.
Yeah.
Kevin and I got the podcast about the Batman Lego movie, which I was not thrilled that my wife bought on iTunes for $20 the other day.
Wow!
After she said they wanted to see it.
But I thought that they didn't love it.
That's what I said.
Well, he couldn't stay still. I remember he kept moving around the seat. And
I said, did they watch it? She's like, no, they talk a lot in this movie. It's not really a kid's movie. I said, I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, come on.
Bro, I know.
All right, so a lot going on, and Joshua, we'll get into everything, but I guess we haven't heard from Kevin at all about his take on the season. Kevin, yeah. As somebody who is not sort of following this on like the minute by minute as Josh and I are forced to, I shouldn't say forced, we get to.
Yes, it's a privilege.
Yeah.
I'm not a Rena Jervis.
What's your take on the Game Changers?
It's tough. I mean, to, you know, prereq, like I've watched Survivor since season one. Like, it's been a family tradition, I think, at this point. And now it's become like a personal family. I roped my girlfriend into it. I've never really followed the outside world of it. So I'm just looking at the season as a whole. I hate saying this, but like the word that comes to mind is just disappointing.
Ooh. Disappointing.
Yeah, and it's not even like the season as a whole, I'm disappointed that this is what the season was. It's like a level of also how it's all turning out and like the things that happen, the people that go home always just like, oh God. It's like disappointment after
the pre-merge
disappointment.
Was tough for you.
That's stupid. That's boring. I don't like it.
No, come on. You're being too hard on it, Sarah.
Yeah, it's really tough. There was a lot of people I really liked coming into it, and I still like a lot of them. I felt people were making choices, and I'm like, what are you doing? Why are you making this choice? What is happening? I'm yelling into a void because I don't participate kind of in the, you know, like, internet world of it. I don't know if people are, like, saying the same thing, so it's just me yelling at my girlfriend. She was like, yeah, I know. I agree with you. Stop yelling at me.
Yeah, I think it's a mix. You know, I think that there's certainly people who really love this season, and I think there are a lot of people who kind of have your take on it. I think that I think a polarizing season seems like the fair word to say.
Yeah, I think polarizing is one word to describe it, but polarizing really implies that some people are saying this is the best and other people are saying it's the worst. And I feel like that's probably not the case.
Yeah.
I feel like that what you're expressing, Kevin, I think a lot of people have expressed this opinion. And I want to bring in the words of a great friend of the podcast, somebody who has been doing the season rankings for the longest time. And that would be Dalton Ross over at Entertainment Weekly.
Yes.
And always in the episode before the finale, he reveals what his new season rankings are. And he slots in the current season into his pecking order. And he always does that right before the finale. And this week, of course, we get those rankings. And I guess, unsurprisingly, Dalton Ross had this. This is the 34th season. And he had this exactly at 17.
Wow, middle of the pack, middle of the road.
Middle of the pack. And I think that's probably where a lot of people would have it. But I thought he got into something very interesting. And I actually, hat tip to Survivor Reddit for pulling this before I had a chance to see it. But here's how Dalton Ross describes this season. I want to get your reactions to this. He says, here it is, 17 out of 34, smack dab in the middle. What a weird season this has been. On one hand, there's been a bevy of huge, crazy tribal councils with last-second whispering and maneuvering leading to jaw-dropping exits. We were treated to two titans of the game, Tony and Sandra, going toe-to-toe. We saw one of the ugliest moments ever, Jeff Varner outing Zeke, turn into a shining, instructive example of how to handle intensive bullying via the reactions from Zeke and his tribe mates. But something was missing. It's hard to put your finger right on it, but it felt like that this season lacked a consistent flow. Instead of a gradually building arc, we were instead presented with what could be best described as a random series of events. Said events were all exciting, but they failed to form a cohesive unit. He goes on to say that players like Tony, Malcolm, Sandra, JT all went out before the merge. Ozzy went home in a double eviction. But he says, no offense to someone like Sarah, who appears to have played a very strong game, but she and most of the others who are left are not as dynamic as the personalities we lost early on. So I thought this was something really interesting, and I don't know if anybody has vocalized this exact sentiment as well as Dalton does here, Josh.
Yeah, no, I think that there's something to the idea of there's something missing. I'm chewing on the idea of, like, it feels like a series of random events. It feels episodic in a way where I feel like, you know, Survivor typically is, you know, it's building a narrative where there's like a real consistent through line, and there's a real consistent, you know, series of characters that you're really, really watching. thing. But the pre-merge, I think just by necessity of what that boot order was and some of the major events that happened in that pre-merge, kind of had to focus really heavily on the people who we were going to lose really quickly. You know, you can't not really focus on Tony Vlachos, even if he's only there for 2 hours of television. Like, you're really going to have to showcase that guy, and you're going to want to showcase that guy.
So you feel like, just to tell me if I have this right, that you feel like that sort of like the character development that you feel like that we're lacking now came at the expense of getting to see these people who were the titans of the game who went out early.
Yeah, I think kind of by necessity of that. Like, I mean, how could you not, you know, showcase Sandra while you have her, especially while Sandra is doing all the things that she's doing? And then a lot of these people who are in the end game now weren't major factors in the early game. So it's hard to really highlight them to the extent that, like, listen, we know who our final six is now, and if they were, you know, monstrously featured throughout the season at the expense of Sandra, who is going to go the place that she's going to go in, like, would anyone be thrilled with that? I don't think so. Like, these people are going to get their chance to shine in the post-merge. But I do think that that leads to, you know, a feeling of, you know, maybe a little bit hollow. You know, like, maybe there is just a little bit of something empty about the season compared to other seasons. And I think I've been trying to think about, you know, where I would rank this season as well, for me personally, and I don't really have a specific ranking of the seasons. I've shied away from doing that, but I've been thinking, like, it's probably towards the back half. You know, it's somewhere in the back half. I don't know if I would even have it quite as high as Dalton does. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that this game's real complicated right now, don't you think? Like, this is, you know, probably one of the most complicated seasons that we've gotten. I don't know if that's a great thing.
It's definitely complicated. Kevin, do you feel the same way?
Yeah, it's weird because, like, hearing like the your question just now of, like, something is missing. And I've been thinking about this, and that question sparked something that I was thinking about and answers it. And this will be a little bit follow along. But what's missing to me is Jon Snow. And let me explain how this all shakes out.
The King in the North.
Yeah. Like,
do I have to put the spoiler warning out there?
Not for a little bit, yeah.
Okay, up to what season?
Not the last one, the one before that, probably.
Okay. All right. There's Game of Thrones, yes. Through season 5, spoiler alert.
Yes. So the reason why, and this is partially Josh's start, because Josh described...
Josh is Stark.
Yeah. Josh described Malcolm's moment as a Red Wedding-esque exit. Yes. And that a lot of people felt that, and I feel like that's very accurate. And what the problem, not problem, but like what we've seen this season are all these big players, these big, like, kings and queens of Westeros turning against each other and stabbing each other and murdering each other and cannibalizing each other as it's been going down. And so all these, like, powerful people from the past that we've, you know, that we've, like,
main
connected
characters
to.
Characters dying fast and unexpectedly.
Right, and then all of a sudden, you know, you have, like, the people left now are there, and you're just like, oh my god, all, you know, like, the Ned is dead, like, this person's dead, all these people are dead. Whereas you look in Game of Thrones, even when Rob went away, you had your Jon Snow becomes the hero, is the person you're rooting for, is the person you're just like, the guy who unites all the desperate groups left over in the North, and that's, like, kind of what he's doing right now. Mm-hmm. And, like, I actually thought about this comparison to a certain extent. Like, Rob, you, to me, at a certain point, you were a John. You took the groups
that's
and were
what
just,
I've been saying for
right?
years, John.
Yeah.
Great Photoshop art of Jon Snow.
And I feel like that's the thing. Like, you had this person who was kind of uniting
also,
the group as best as they can.
This is a good preview for Survivor, Rob's versus John's.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. This is why I brought Kevin into the studio, so he could, you know, compliment you and compare you.
Yes, this is really what it's about. Yeah. And I feel like that's what's missing to me, is that you don't have that person now who is the John trying to unite these people.
Well, let me just say, in defense of, I think, what the story is that Sarah is that person. Now, maybe she hasn't resonated enough with the audience, or you in particular, but I mean that is the person.
Yeah,
like she is the Daenerys Targaryen of this story, who has really been the person who was sort of like left for dead. Nobody thought she was a threat, and she has become, with all due respect to Kim Spradlin, who normally we reserve the Daenerys comparison.
She's almost a little more Littlefinger.
Yeah,
you know, she's almost a little more chaotic. chaos is a ladder and let me, you know, swing from position to position week after week. Let me completely upset the apple cart and thrive in that way. Like, I think that there's a chaotic style to the way that Sarah is playing that I don't know that I would call her like the, you know, like the Azor Ahai reborn.
Right.
Like,
right. She hasn't come on and then started winning challenge after challenge. And really, that's a fair comparison. And I guess because she's been somewhat underhanded in what she's been doing, is that why the audience hasn't connected with her? I mean, even go back to Tony in his original season. She wanted to be Tony. Don't forget, everybody rooted for Spencer in that season.
Right.
Tony complained about, why did I get such a bad edit? Why didn't everybody? It hurt Tony that people weren't rooting for him to win. When Tyler Perry was at the finale of that season, that Jeff Probst was saying with Tyler Perry, hey, you guys just didn't like the Tyler Perry idol because Tony found it. It's sort of that Tony's image, our perception of Tony has changed over the years. He was kind of a bad guy in that season where people wanted the underdog Spencer to win.
Yeah.
Yeah. Woo.
Or
woo.
Yeah, there were certainly people who wanted Wu to win. So I think there's something to that idea, though, of like, you know, the people that you would walk into this season being very excited about. I think a lot of them got burned really fast, Dragonfire and such.
Yes.
And, you know, there's certainly still a few of those people even still active now. But I don't know, you know, how many people. And I guess I could just say this without fear of getting blocked anymore. But like, who was really pumped about Troy Zan coming into the season?
Now they got
one. Well, you're still trying to save yourself here. I've got nothing to save anymore.
Okay. But let me just on the Sarah point, because I think this is an interesting one, just to tie it back to Tony in Kagyan. If Sarah can pull this off, I wonder if we will look back at this season more fondly than we are right now. She hasn't done it yet. Here she is. She's like the interloper who has come in and tried to knock out our favorites. But if she ultimately does succeed in this, I wonder when we look back from this a year or two, like, hey, remember when Sarah pulled that all off and she played this really great game in Survivor Game Changers? Perhaps just in the present, we don't think of her this way.
Right.
But once we know the end of the story, then we'll sort of redefine how we were looking at this season as it was happening.
Yeah, I think so. I think at the very least, like if Sarah is able to pull it off, then it's going to be a really fun win to certainly talk about whenever we get to talking about it in a retrospective way. But I do think that something that you said earlier when you were turning to Kevin said maybe Sarah's not resonating with you, or maybe certain people aren't resonating with you. It's just not. It's not the core cast that you expected. I think. Mm-hmm. You know. I think that there is a certain lack of resonance of some of the people that are left. And I think that your mileage is going to vary, or Varys in that, you know, situation.
or Vetus.
But I think that there's something to that. I think that there's just sort of that through line that you see in a lot of seasons of Survivor does not really feel like it's completely here. And I really do think a lot of it has to do with how complicated the game is this season, which I've defended. You know, it's called Game Changer, so why not like throw in a butt ton of twists and make things a little bit harder for everybody? But I think that in some cases it can really complicate the narrative a little bit. I think you know, the going from two tribes to three tribes to back to two and then down to one, it's a lot, especially when, you know, two tribes at the start is only going to last for one episode, and then that original Nuku is really going to be a dominant force in the rest of the game, and there's just not a ton of clarity on why they're all still so close. So I think that there's just a little bit of the gameplay mechanics that I think once the game gets to a certain level of complication, it can be really, really hard to follow as a viewer.
So I want to go back to the Dalton Ross thing, because I think it really connected with me what he was saying, where he talked about how it just seemed like this was a lot of random events that just were all strung together. And I have found that to really be the case, that often this season we have the previously on and then we see everybody come back from Tribal Council. And it does seem like often out of nowhere, we hear one of the players, and it happened this week, where, you know, that people were reacting to Sarah sort of like making eyes with Sierra Dawn Thomas, or acting sort of like shocked about that. And we saw Sarah say, you know, Andrea, I can't stand her. I need to get her out of the game. And it's kind of like, okay, we'll go with that. But since when did that happen?
Right.
When, like, they were on the same page. And I mean, it happened with Zeke and Andrea this season, where it was just all of a sudden Zeke is like, I don't trust Andrea. She's got to go. It's like, wait, since when? I thought you guys were on the same page.
Yep.
So it's almost like we have a reset every single week. And then where it seemed like that Sarah had a good relationship with Sierra and Brad, we had an episode a couple of weeks back where she said, okay, Brad's got to go this week. And I was like, wait, hold on. I thought you were trying to, I thought you had a good setup with those guys. Kevin, do you feel that way?
Yeah, no, it's really funny because, like, I believe it was last week's episode, even on the opposite end, when Sierra was like, Sarah's like my best friend out here, it was like, wait, since when did that happen? Like, when were you guys best friends? And it does feel almost like a weird narrative and chaotic, and things are changing and the relationships don't make sense. It is, and like, I think, yeah, random events is episodic. I feel like, yeah, that's a good indicator of like how this season feels. And it is disjointed.
And I'll even throw in like Debbie and Brad. We had a whole episode. Debbie hates Brad. Brad can't, you know, Debbie's out of control. And then the merge happened. And then they were just like back together. And then Debbie didn't want to hear anything bad about Brad.
Yeah.
And maybe that's to speak to, was Debbie playing a character? And then there's no real way to explain that in the episode when somebody is like faking us out. But it just was really hard to follow, you know, who actually was with who. Unless you sort of like were really keeping track of the numbers and who, or like Michaela cries at the tribal council where Zeke went home. It's like we didn't even see that they were friends, other than that we had to remember that they were on the previous season
together. Yeah,
and you know, Sarah's had so many different alliances with different people, and then it's been really hard to follow who's with who the whole way through. And I talked about this where last week we saw so much time of Michaela and Ty. Michaela's going to work with Ty. This week, Michaela hates Ty, and we didn't really get to see on the show why those two had a falling out. And I'm going to make an analogy, and it might be a bit of a stretch, but follow with me, okay? And
I'm excited.
You know, one of my favorite movies of all time is the film Boogie Nights from 1997.
Oh, this is a good start. This is a great start.
Dirk Wiggler.
And Jack Horner, as played by Burt Reynolds, that he is a filmmaker. And look, he knows what people want to see. And I'll use the Survivor terms. He knows people are coming in. They want to see the blind sides,
yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
They want to see the big votes.
They want to see you in the buff.
Right.
Yes.
They want to see the big moves. Everybody wants, you know, they come in. Everyone wants the big moves. But Jack Horner says, I know that this is what they want to see, but I'm going to give them a story.
Yeah.
And they want a plot and they want a story. But the competition is making and changing the industry to the point where people are saying, just get rid of the plot here. The people just want to show up for the big moves and the big votes and see everything just go down.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Jack resists to that because that's not what he wanted to do. He wanted to tell a story.
He's an artist.
That was an art. And I wonder if this is sort of like a sort of the Gonzo version of, you know, of Survivor here this season, where we just have big, exciting votes. But as Dalton sort of articulated, we're sort of missing the story of how it's all coming to be.
Yeah. And I think that my feeling on that is the long game story, like the end game story, does not involve the people that you would be most excited about coming into the season, because so many of them get trimmed so quickly. And I don't know that there was like a good answer to that, because like if you do have a season that has Tony in it and Sandra in it and JT is there and Ozzy is there, and if you're not focusing on them while they're here and they're just window dressing, then I think you're really starting to figure out who we're driving at, like who's going to be here in the final six. And you're also going to be mad that you didn't get to spend any time with these people. So I think it's an unfortunate confluence of things where just, I don't know, you know, the whole, like, the game plays out the way that it plays out. So of course, like, you know, the people who've made it as far as they have, great on them, good on you guys for sure. But I think, I don't know, don't you think you'd be really, really bummed out if Sandra wasn't heavily featured while she was on the show?
Oh, certainly. I don't know what you could have done differently.
Nothing.
At that point. I mean, you have to tell the story of what was happening then. So turning it back to this week also, because we had this big moment with Suri trying to play the advantage, which turned out to be non-transferable. I thought it was interesting that we saw this moment from Suri's point of view and not from the point of view of Sarah pulling off a move. So we didn't see Sarah tell us in confessional, hey, here's what I'm doing.
This thing is non-transferable.
It's non-transferable. I'm giving it to Suri. I'm giving it to her right before we get to tribal council. And I'm going to test her. I'm going to see if she's going to really try to use this against me. Instead, we saw this from the perspective of Suri, which was, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get this vote steal. And then we too, much like from Suri's perspective, were blindsided at that tribal council. Kevin, do you think that that was the best way to tell this particular story?
I think, and this goes to what you were saying, I think it was the most dramatic way to tell the story. Because, like, if by not having it from Sarah's perspective, you essentially cut out the foreshadowing. Because if you had it from a storytelling standpoint,
right? But do we need Chekhov's loophole?
I feel like in this, I mean, it made the moment, like you said, blindsided for the audience. And I feel like as a viewer, that's kind of cool. But then, like, as a person looking at the overall story, you're just like, yeah, but like, what? You know?
Yeah.
Like, it's an in the moment cool decision as far as like the edit, but overall, it's what it contributes to the chaotic nature of the story. Well,
it was really tough because it did require, like, you had to do a lot of gapping. Like, you had to fill in the blanks of what happened, because nobody was walking into that tribal council thinking Michaela was going home. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no footage of anyone talking about Michaela and her being somebody who is even in the vicinity of being targeted. And so once all of that madness goes down, and you can really understand, like, the game logic of why Michaela is now going to be the person that Sarah is going to target here. Like, if Sarah now has decided, like, even if you really were trying to save me with my own advantage, Suri, and even if you were trying to do that, like, you were clearly making a move, it was going to be at my expense, I'm probably going to have to take you out anyway, so now you've just given me every public reason in the book to publicly turn against you, but rather than vote you out, why don't I vote out one of your most loyal lieutenants who's going to be a challenge threat down the stretch here, and I can get rid of you in the very next vote. So it makes a lot of sense for why she did what she did, if you think about it that way, but the show doesn't give you a ton, you know, in terms of like upfront content of like, this is why I'm coming for Michaela. This is why I've given you the advantage. The whole non-transferable thing, I think, was a blindside, not just to the players and not just to us, but I feel like to the show itself a little bit. And I think it was really hard to react to it.
It's just interesting from the narrative point of view that I feel like in Survivor, we usually see the move from the perspective of the person who is the victor in for the particular move. We're not really seeing when we are seeing those things, it's sort of like we have sort of like the ominous music happening as the person is telling us about this plan. And I'm sure that there are some good examples out there. Like, I think that when we see JT writing the letter to Russell Hands, like,
right,
this is a bad plan. I think that the show treats it like, okay, this is a, you know, an ominous plan that's going to go wrong. Now, again, we have also this issue where we have Suri, who is the obvious fan favorite of this group of six, who's going, so you sort of like getting people's hopes up. Here's Suri, she's going to pull off this another spectacular move,
right?
But ultimately she's going to be done in by this loophole in not a numbers loophole,
yeah.
But you know, she didn't read the fine print here, so
it's a great column, by the way.
Yeah, yes, fantastic.
Just got to shout out my fellow Hollywood Reporter writer Dan Feinberg.
So I wonder if maybe people would have, and again, I haven't seen like a backlash to this. It's not like people are like going nuts, like, you know, WTF, why wasn't she able to play this? But I just wonder if maybe it would have been like, you know, to see Sarah, you know, have the chance to own this move more, as opposed to that, you know, the way that we saw it from Suri's point of view.
But I think that that's the thing, is like, I think it was so unexpected and so complicated that I don't think that that was filmed. Like, I don't think that confessional exists. I can't imagine, you know, that, right. that Sarah okay, is so like, Sarah, okay, so I'm giving this to her and I know that if she does this, then I'm going to be able to yank it away from
and
her.
And this will be a great question to ask Sarah when we get a chance to talk to her this week of just like how much, was this the plan going in?
I think you have to fashion the story based on what you have, right. you know, and if they don't have that material, they just have to fashion the story that they have. And that's, you know, that's its own set of issues.
Right. And this is all a good point because I think that Sarah was probably really blindsided by the fact that Ceree was going to try to play the advantage. Like Sarah may have known what she was doing, but she wasn't giving an interview to say like, hey, so I'm giving my advantage tonight to Ceree that if she tries to play it, it's non-transferable. She may have just knew that information and felt like that she was giving the advantage to Ceree as a sign of trust.
Now, how about this? If it had worked and the non-transferable thing doesn't exist and Ceree was able to just like dunk on everybody with this move, how incredible would that have been?
I mean, amazing, but that would have been, that's the thing too, right? Because like, that would have been like Ceree's moment, like, did Ceree just win the game? Like, that could have been very well her moment of it right there. And maybe it is a bizarre like audience surprise. Like, I feel like, if anything, a narrative we're getting in the yes, I think that maybe the confessional exists, but we're also seeing a lot in this season of people leading to their own destruction. Like this season, a lot of the people we like, as much as we like them and I still like them, they brought a lot of what happened onto themselves to a certain extent. It was decisions they made and things they did that led to their own destruction. And
don't you dare say anything bad about Tony. I will kick you out of the Wiggle Room so fast.
Oh, no, that wasn't Tony's fault. I mean, Tony and Sandra got against each other real early, and that was just, again, but that's
not
the mutual destruction.
A little bit of it.
But I love Tony Vlachos. I mean, like, what you were saying about him being the bad guy, I was like, yeah, but, like, he's a bad guy I love. Yeah. Like, but, like, yeah, I feel like it's a weird thing that we're seeing people try and do great things and make big moves, but eventually like leading to their own downfall. And then you have someone like Sarah, who I honestly think is doing a great job playing the game. The connection and the personal connection maybe is missing, but as far as like a player, I think she's been doing wonderful, smart, very clever, and, you know, kind of like mischievous things, mind you, but I think it's working in her favor.
So, Josh, do you want to take this opportunity as we head into the final six and sort of do a check-in with everybody here?
Sure. Yeah, how about in order of can they win?
Okay.
We've done that in the past. There's no music this time. There was no music in this Wiggle Room this season. I apologize for that. But I guess we probably would start with Troyzan then.
Okay.
Because I think Troyzan's got the least shot of winning.
Okay.
He's invisible on the show. There's just no story behind him whatsoever at all. So I would say that of everybody left, even though there's people who are probably in weaker game positions, mm-hmm. I don't think that there's anybody in a weaker story position than Troyzan.
Certainly. Is there any room to reverse that?
No.
No.
No, not this far. And there's no story for him this season. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's he finds an idol. There's that scene with him and Sarah in the Tavua days that still hasn't really paid off.
Mm-hmm.
He tore his ACL and that wasn't on the show, you know?
Yeah.
There's no story for Troyzan this season.
But what's the disconnect? Because he was the guy that definitely got his fair share of screen time back in One World. Kevin, were you a Troyzan fan? A Troy fan from One World?
Was not a Troyzan fan.
Oh, he's getting blocked. Kevin's getting blocked.
I'm sorry.
At Kev Mahadeo on Twitter.
Oh, no.
Click.
The Banhammer.
Sorry.
It's not that I didn't dislike him, but it wasn't, I mean, he had his story, but he also was so showboaty. And there was just something about that, like, this is my island, that I'm just like, calm it down. Take a breath.
Okay, so that's interesting, though. So we talked about this season, him coming back, and I feel like that if the advice we were going to give Troyzan was, hey, play the social game, and ultimately, you know, just take the hard edges off. And if we were going to say, if somebody was going to come back and have the spirit of their winner, and to go back and sort of critique my own podcasting, I often said of Kim Spradlin back in Survivor One World, very boring, very boring. Can we see a personality here?
Right.
She's like a robot. Everything is game, game, game. We never get to see. And then after the fact, we got to see, you know, her really sparkling personality, which everybody raved about when they were out there. I mean, should we not maybe give Troyzan credit for taking on the Kim persona to some degree. He's played the social game. He hasn't pissed people off.
Sure, but he's done nothing in terms of the coalition building that Kim did. You know, and none of like the...
I just wonder if Kim didn't win her season, would she not have gotten as much airtime as she did? And she got a lot.
Yeah, probably not.
But was that more winner edit in her season where, again, that, you know, she, it wasn't like a lot of people to steal the screen time from her either.
I don't know. Aside from the fact that they were on the same season, it's very hard for me to compare Kim to Troye Sivan. That's like comparing apples and, I don't know, not even a vegetable, like apples and shoes, you know?
Look, but I if we were, like, if the criticism of Troye Sivan coming in was, hey, he's got to tone it down, he's got a bad attitude.
I think he's playing,
piss everybody off.
I think he's playing a better game this season than he played his first time.
Certainly,
you know, he's quiet, he's, you know, he's non-threatening, he is, he seems affable enough out there.
I just don't want to be a hypocrite, where I, like, coming into the season, I said, this is what the guy needs to do, and then he did what he said he needed to do.
Sure.
And it's like, hey, where's the airtime, Troye Sivan?
Well,
come on.
Because he's clearly just not factored into any of like the big decision making. Mm-hmm. And so there's just, you know, it's not a diss on how he's playing the game. He's playing a very, very competent game that gets you deep into the game, but I don't know that he's been playing a winning game. You know, it would depend on who he's at the end there with, but even then, like, it's hard for me to think of like who in this final six could Troye Sivan beat. I just don't really see that. So I think that he's doing everything right to continue being alive in the game. There's just nothing exciting or flashy in terms of here is something that's on my resume, unless he does something super cool with his idol. But I think that just the fact that he has been so quiet on the show, that the show has been so quiet with Troye Sivan, says to me that he doesn't have a shot to win.
Well, let me throw another idea out there, and I'm going to invent a term. Is there such a thing as big move shaming?
Big move shaming.
Where? Okay, hear me out. Hear me out here with this. Okay. So, Troye Sivan, he really did not make a big move. I mean, the one time we really saw him was when he went and found the idol. So, sort of like, you know, that's sort of like the positive, like, affirmation on this, where, you know, when he went out and he found the idol and he went into the challenge and he pulled it off. That was the one episode where you saw him a lot. But other than that, you know, he's played a pretty, you know, conservative game. He hasn't flipped sides. And therefore, the show's like, what do we need to show what he's thinking? Because he's not making a big move here. We need to show the people that are factoring in the big moves.
If that's the case, I'm not against it, honestly. I mean, you know, I think that Troye Sivan was in the running for Second Chance. He has a lot of stories also about seasons that he missed out on, but he was in the running for Second Chance, which is America votes you back onto Survivor, and he did not get voted on to Survivor. And yet he is brought back just a couple of seasons later, and here he is, and it's all right. Just show us what you're made of. Show us why you were in the running for that to begin with. And there's just been nothing flashy at all.
Right.
Unless you read the exit interviews. So I feel like in that regard, like if you're going to really beat the odds and come back and you're just going to play a really steady game and that's what you're prioritizing, which is totally fine, then I think that you can't be mad at the edit that you get.
Yeah, his strategy has been an old school one in that sort of like
totally.
Build your numbers, build up your coalition.
Which is a fine strategy.
You know, find an idol. Put it in your pocket, hold on to it, you know, keep the number strong. And I mean, I think that, there's nothing wrong with that, but it's not necessarily a strategy that the show rewards here in season 34.
In terms of the storytelling, and I think that that's fine. You know, I think that's fine. It depends on what your priorities are. That's a perfectly great way to play the game. But if you're looking to be on the show, if you're looking to really be on television, don't be shocked when you're kind of buried in the edit.
Yeah. I mean, even with his idol, I don't think there's a situation where Troye Sivan can emerge a victor. Like, just even if he plays the idol, I think there's a very, very smart way that the idols could be played. I mean, I can save that for the person. Honestly, when we get to tie, I have a prediction of how things can shake out in everyone's, or at least those three's favor. And Troye Sivan would use his idol in that case, but even then, it won't be flashy, won't be big, and like, well, if he's left there with anyone else... if he's left there with anyone else, I think other people have a better resume to talk to at the end. And I can't see him walking out of victor. I mean, again, like you said, he's playing quiet. We can't complain that he's doing the thing we told him to do and be like, well, now you're just too boring. Like, we can't blame him for that, but yeah, it is going to be that. If you don't do anything big, you don't do anything, you know, like game-changing during the season, you're not going to get the screen time.
Right. I guess in the season called Game Changers, the show is not rewarding somebody
who's playing
who has come in
game.
With thieves, really old school mentality.
And who has really defied the odds to come back for a second time,
yeah.
I think.
And even though he's somebody who played in season 24, that he is sort of like an old school player.
Yeah. I think so.
He's a person that he's been around with the show that, you know, playing since season two. He knows a ton of these old school players. And so I think that that's sort of his, you know, mentality and thinking coming into this game. But as we're talking about with, you know, Jack Horner theory, it's a season where, you know, we're like, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I hope that he enjoyed his experience. You know, I hope that that's the reward. Like, you got to go back out and you got to play again and you've gone really deep this time. And I hope that that day-to-day experience is something that he looks back on very, very fondly, because clearly the show just hasn't highlighted it. And it is what it is.
And if not, third time's the charm.
I'm out.
All right. Let's get to who's number five in your power rankings.
As much as I hate to say it, I think for similar reasons, it's probably, and also because she's not in a great position in the game right now, is Aubrey, who I love dearly. And I love the way that Aubrey plays. And I think once again, you know, Aubrey has done what Aubrey can do this season. And both her and Troyzan, you know, coming from the original Mana tribe, the fact that they're even still in the mix, like, you know, at a certain point, it really did feel like it was just going to be a frog march of these people, that the entire Mana tribe would be wiped out. And they're still here, so that's great. But it's been very quiet narratively. Aubrey has been more of a gift than a character, as has been talked about in podcasts in the past. I don't see what her story is here. And I even wonder, like, would this jury respect the way that she's played? I don't know that they necessarily would. So I think, you know, on almost any other season, like, I would really have Aubrey pretty high on this list. I believe even for Ko-Rong, she was my winner pick going into that finale. But I don't see it given what we've gotten from Aubrey this year.
It really sucks because, like, I also really like Aubrey. I don't think she's like you said, she hasn't done the big thing. She hasn't done the game changing moves. Like,
she hasn't really had a shot to.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I honestly believe, like, and I will keep saying it, Aubrey should have won her season. I think she was my personal, like she should have walked away with it, but
it sounds like a bunch of malarkey to me.
Yeah, Michelle disagrees.
it's in this situation, she has come back, but she hasn't done anything that's just like, oh man, check that out. Look at these big moves. And I don't see her having a possible opportunity to do it at all.
Now that really did sound like some big move shaming.
Check out the big moves on her. Yeah.
Oh, stop that.
Yeah. Okay. I agree. I think it's going to be a tough go for Aubrey here.
It's hard. I mean, I think that she could, I don't even know if she can keep going. Like, I think that this is the moment where Sarah is just like, all right, peace out, Aubrey and Suri. You know, I feel like that's where she is right now, and
Does
I just don't see how Aubrey advances.
Final three appeal as somebody who, do the other players recognize her as somebody who can't win? Especially, you know, we hear this about Ty, that he didn't have a great Final Tribal Council performance. Do you think that because she didn't win in Ko-Rong, right, there might be a perception of, hey, this is a good person to take with me to the final three?
Oh my God. I don't know that my Ko-Rong loving heart could handle it.
I think it would be a incorrect perception.
Yeah.
But is that an idea?
It would just be really, really tough to watch, like, Aubrey and Ty make the final three again and somebody else win. I don't know that I have it in me to, like, see that. No, it's a good point. I don't know. I mean, there was a lot of fear towards Aubrey. I said this at the live know-it-alls with you and Steven a couple of weeks ago of, like, this season was shot, you know, a week and a half, 2 weeks after the Ko-Rong finale airs. There is a lot of, you know, talk about Aubrey in terms of somebody who's very dangerous, somebody who's very good at this game. The fact that she has survived this long while Ty is still actively in the game, too, really is kind of amazing to me. Like, of all of the ways this season could have broken, it's very hard for me to fathom the world where Aubrey has stuck around as long as she has and has not been considered much of a threat at all. It's not impossible that she's looked at as somebody that you could just beat in the end. I really don't know, but I don't know that she's going to get that shot to move forward. I think that she just won an immunity this past week, which was awesome. But now she's proven herself to be somebody who's potentially threatening in that regard. So I would imagine, you know, I think, like, if Sarah has made a move where she has flipped over to Troy and Brad and Ty for the time being, or at least for this next final stretch, I mean, we're in the final stretch. I think that she would probably target Aubrey Aubrey before Ceree, don't you think?
I would think so. I feel like that Ceree or Aubrey is probably going to be the person that goes out here at six. And then whoever ultimately survives this,
they
got to
win
six,
some immunities.
Tribal Council. Well, I think there's a couple of different ways that they can go, but I don't think that both of them get past six. I think one of them goes out at six, and the other one has the option to sort of get picked up as a third person. It depends on if you think that Sarah and Ty could effectively be a pair and then pick up the other straggler who's there, or could somebody like an Aubrey, could they flip to a Brad and a Troyzan or Ceree if they're left? You know, I think that there is some wiggle room there, Josh.
Yeah, just a little.
A tiny bit.
There really is very little wiggle room.
Just a touch.
Very little. But I think that one goes out at six and the other one has a chance to get to the final three.
Yeah. And I think that if I'm in the game and those are, you know, if the situation is what it is and I'm in that majority group right now, I think that I go for Aubrey before I go for Ceree.
You wouldn't take out Ceree? Because I feel like that Ceree is the one that has the best chance to win, though.
Yeah, but I think that she has the least chance of the two of them, certainly, to win challenges and to win immunities. And so you're gonna test your luck that you have a shot at her at five.
Yeah.
Yeah. Aubrey is good in the challenges, but you know, Brad's out there. Troyzan's won immunities. Sarah is great in the challenges. Ty has won immunities.
I think you're gambling either way.
Somebody go out there. And again, you could argue this is how I lost Survivor of the Amazon. But I'm consistent.
Yes.
I'll say take out the person that I'm afraid of winning the game, which is Ceree, and then somebody beat Aubrey.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got two more shots. Somebody beat her.
I think, you know, you're gambling. You're kind of flipping a coin either way. You know, fate's going to break the way it's going to break in that situation. I could see an argument in either direction.
I'm more afraid of Ceree pulling off something in these next couple of votes Aubrey winning out immunity.
But Ceree has also just flamed out very spectacularly in public in front of the jury. You know, she went and tried to execute this massive move and it failed hard. You know, it jumped off the diving board and just landed in an empty pool.
And it failed publicly in front of the entire jury. And it was a simple like, well, you should have read the fine print.
So like, just listen to both of you. She's still Ceree.
I agree. I love Ceree.
That was literally the next thing I was going to say. But is that enough? Is it enough? I mean, if the three of us are on that jury, we're voting Ceree against just about anybody.
Yeah, that's
because
accurate.
We love Ceree and she's been fantastic in Survivor. Yep. But how do those people feel? How do they feel? And I think after this past week, she loses some edge. I mean, the longer you keep her in the game, the more you risk the fact that Ceree can be Ceree. That Ceree can do something 3-2-1. Like, she can come up with some sort of crazy plan and you're going to get screwed because of it. But I think that that's also doing a disservice to Aubrey's reputation as well, as where Aubrey is also a dangerous strategic threat. Certainly not, you know, of the legendary stature of Ceree Fields. Few people are. But I think that, again, it goes back to you're kind of flipping a coin. You've got two people who are very strategically powerful or have proven that in the past. And I think one of them is a clear favorite in terms of challenges. And maybe the other one you'd like to think is like the clear favorite to win if she gets there. I think right now at this point, I'm going to take out the person who's going to be more of a threat in challenges.
Okay, number four in your power rankings.
Oh, man. I mean, I'm flipping a coin here. I'm just going to keep the positivity alive, and I'm going to let Ceree make it one more spot, and I'll talk about Ty here.
Strong disagreement.
Okay, why? So you think that Ty's got a good shot to win here?
I think Ty has one shot and one opportunity to actually win this game, and it's the next episode, and I think it's the next vote. And if this is a moment of, this is kind of what my prediction was / how Troyzan would come into play, if we want to go into that now. But if you're Brad, Ty, and Troyzan right now, as much as you're like, oh, but Ceree and Aubrey, they're strategic, blah, blah, Sarah has the biggest chance of winning this game if she walks to the end. What they need to do, and the one way they can actually survive, is Ty needs to tell them, hey guys, here's the deal. I've got two idols. And Troyzan's like, that's funny, I have one. We're not going anywhere the next vote. And they just walk into the next vote and eliminate Sarah immediately. Because if Sarah can win immunity and walk to the end, neither of those three are going to win.
But Sarah has a legacy advantage, and she will be immune here at the final six.
Right, and that will eliminate either Ceree and Aubrey. But it's a play, I think, that's
But if they did that at the final five,
then that works out in their favor. I think that's the way.
Oh my God!
I think that, honestly, that is a move that if it happened, they eliminated Sarah. And even if Sarah uses her legacy and protects herself, eliminates one of those two, it's such a baller move that I would be like, Ty could have a chance of winning for making such a giant leap. And even then, three against like, if Sarah walks out, three against them, she'd have to win. And there's still three very competitive challenge winners that she has to beat multiple times.
Okay, just to put that situation out there, some sort of Ty, Troyzan, Brad reunification, Josh. We've talked about a lot this season about how Survivor has this new tie-break rule. If there is a tie vote, and I'm not talking about Ty Trang.
Although you are at the same time.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. That the rock vote, the rock draw will be automatically initiated. We've seen this 3-3 split in Blood Water. You and I were
Look
there.
At what you just did.
Blood, yeah.
You blood watered.
But I do it intentionally.
You blood watered.
Yeah. And then back in Cambodia, you and I were there when the crowd was going nuts. And
wild is the word.
Yes. And we got to, the crowd was going wild. And it was all over a 3-3 or a 0-0 vote at the final six in that particular case. Do you think that there is a strong likelihood of potentially a 3-3 vote?
You know what? We've talked for weeks now about advantage getting.
If it doesn't happen here, it's not happening.
It's not
going to
happen.
Right.
So it's either happening here at the six or it's not going to happen at all. And I feel like the situation is like straightforward enough that I think maybe advantage getting has been averted. But I really think that it's a fairly easy choice for these four people to stick together and either Sari or Aubrey goes next.
Yeah, it does seem clear cut.
And neither of them are going to have any means of protecting
against
that.
But I've talked about a scenario where Sarah has the legacy advantage. She's going to be immune at six no matter what. And could Aubrey and Sari, I feel like their one chance to move forward is to either grab Sarah with the legacy advantage or the winner of the immunity challenge and say, just vote with us. Just initiate the rock draw. Give us a chance to pull rocks. We'll go to the final three. I think that's the only shot for the two of them to move forward.
But who's going to bite that? Like, who's going to take that bait? I don't know that anybody in the game has any reason to do that with Sari and Aubrey, especially because those are, I at least, again, I'm a viewer, so it's different, but I view them as threatening personalities. Mm-hmm. So like, why take that shot on these two people who now you've just got like both guns loaded at them right now?
Okay. Could potentially tie win immunity.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And he's just, it's Christmas and he's just handing out.
Yeah, right.
What if it's the other way around? What if Ty wins immunity and Sarah is the one? She voted with Brad and Troyzan at the last vote. Could that co-wrong connection work one more time? Ty now immune. Hey, just give us a chance to pull a rock, Ty.
I don't know. I mean, we finally...
He's done, you know, Stranger Things.
Sure he has, but we finally got a little bit of Aubrey and Ty in this past episode, and it was not the Aubrey and Ty that you would expect. Like, there were moments where, you know, they were hugging each other, and that was great, but it also seemed like there wasn't a ton of trust between them as well. So, I don't know. I don't think that connection is strong enough this season to give her that
Probably
kind
not.
Of shot here.
Yeah. It's a stretch.
I mean,
it's a lot.
I think...
it's a lot.
I'm like a storyteller. That's what I do.
Yeah. I love Ty. I really do. And I think that he's been really fun this season. And I do think he has been ice cold with his idols where he hasn't been doing anything and he's just like sitting on them. And that's so ridiculous. But he's at least got to be in the final four at this point. You'd have to think unless like the threat of I will not be voted out with an idol is going to finally come true from Ko Rong. And it's going to
I'm not going to go home. With an idol in my pocket.
I'll go home with two.
Yeah, I'll go home with two. Absolutely. He's going to get James Clemented. I don't see that happening.
I mean, to go home with two idols in your pocket with two votes left where you could play them would really be unprecedented.
Yes. I think that, you know, there's an argument to be made if Ty makes it there and if he does some impressive stuff with these two idols that he has left. I think that there's a compelling reason to vote for Ty, especially given who he could potentially be up against in the final three. I do wonder about his ability to argue his case in front of a jury. I feel like he's more confident this time out than he was on his first season, or at least he's presenting that way. But I think now we're talking about these, you know, final four people who I all think there's at least some semblance of a story reason to think that they could be the winner of our season. I would just put Ty sort of last in that list. I think that Sari, Brad, and Sarah have had stronger stories, so that's the big reason why I would put Ty behind Sari. But that's also emotional because I really, really do love Sari, and in my heart of hearts, I really want her to win, but I don't believe that she's got the chance to get there. I think that, you know, if it was about who has a better position in the game, there's no question who has the better position between Ty and Sari. And it's sad for us Sari fans, but
yeah.
Sari's in a bad spot.
I agree with you. Ty needs to do something with the idols or he doesn't have any. I think he has no argument. beyond like, you know, well, I stuck around and I had two idols and like, wait, but why didn't you use them then? You know, like there's a lot of questions that get raised after the fact, but he, something big needs to be done. And I do think, I don't know, I think idol getting is something, advantage getting, sorry. Yes. I think it's something that needs to happen. I think it should. And if it doesn't,
Why do you say it needs to happen?
Just because it would be fun to watch?
It'd be fun to watch, but like this is something, again, the name of the season is Game Changers. Like, it's such a game changing, like, from a meta level moment that I think is going to be, would be incredible to see executed. And for, if it doesn't, then I think that my original feeling of this season being disappointing is sort of like they're in it. Like, they had so many interesting possibilities and none of them played out.
When you say it needs to happen, are you saying that it needs to happen so that this can be a learning experience from the show? Like, this was a bad idea to have all this happen? Or are you sort of in the, you know, the person at the Michael Bay movie, I need to see all this stuff blow up?
I think I don't think it's a learning
Michael
necessarily.
Lucky Bay.
Yes. Learning in like, oh, it's a bad thing. Because, like, you know, when we go back to Second Chances, that moment where they had their own crazy version of advantage getting and immunities was incredible just from a viewership and just from a moment of seeing it happen. And you're just like, wow, this is crazy. And this is some interesting gameplay happening. So I don't think it necessarily makes it bad. I think it's something like, whoa. If this stuff can happen, it can cause this type of like crazy chaos eventually. Maybe this is something that should be sticking around a little bit longer.
Yeah. You know, it really, you could spin it either way, Josh, because we have this advantage, the vote steal in the game. And if Cerie's plan worked this week, nobody would be complaining about too many idols, too many advantages, because the person, just like when Jeff said with Tyler Perry, oh, you're just mad about the Tyler Perry idol because Tony got it. If Spencer had it, you would have been fine. Everybody would have been talking about how great the vote steal is if Cerie would have pulled this off this week.
Steven would have been angry.
Steven would have been unhappy. Sure.
Steven would have been sad.
He would have not been happy.
He would would be saying go fish at that point.
Right.
It would be great. It would have been awesome. It would have been really, really super, super fun. But it didn't shake out that way. I feel like, you know, we'll talk in a couple days once this is all wrapped. But I feel like advantage getting has been averted just because I don't see why it would happen now. You know, I just think it's such a, at least for six, it should be such a clear cut 4-2.
Right. But I think that there's a good chance that we see potentially 2 to 3 idols played at the final five.
Yeah, that for sure. I mean, why wouldn't you at that point? Like, if Ty is able to hang on to his idol, onto both idols through the six, then now you're looking at three people who ought to just automatically be immune at five, plus a fourth because somebody's going to win a challenge. And then maybe that's where somebody gets screwed, because then there's going to be one person who's just vulnerable by default.
Yeah. Can I just ask a quick question, a procedural question, in terms of how this rock draw works? Josh, if we have a scenario at the final five, okay, who goes, just pick somebody, who goes out of final six?
Let's just say Aubrey is gone.
Okay, Aubrey goes out of final six. Hypothetically speaking, could there be a scenario at final five where if it's a 2-2-1 vote, does that initiate a rock draw?
Well, is the 2-2-1? Yeah, I would guess so, right?
Okay, they don't make fire at 2-2-1?
I don't think so. I have no idea.
Okay. All right, just interesting.
2v2v1.
Right. I mean, this could be a scenario where, you know, we talk about in the preseason, back when you talk with Dom and Colin about the idea of somebody potentially, oh, let me put my vote here, or let me move my vote over here to sort of like strategically initiate the rock draw. Maybe it happens there.
Yeah. I don't know. I have no idea. No clue.
All right.
I was going to say, I feel like there is a possibility, like you were kind of hinting at here, where they're almost like, so if we get to five and we have three people that have idols that if Ty can play them, one person has immunity, they don't go to a vote at that point. It's just like, I'm sorry, you're done. You got to go. Like, if you got four people who are automatically immune, that sort of eliminates that person by default.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have been looking at six as an advantage get in spot, but I think, you know, five could be a place where you're now suddenly with four people who are immune and one person is just like, oh, well, see you later.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. They would probably have a whole tribal council and then say, like, oh, let me tally the votes. And like, oh, Jeff, I got this. And right. Like, okay, all right. Well,
all right, well, see ya. Bye.
Yeah. It's like, I guess we could count these votes, but, you know, that you're the only person that's eligible. So you have to go home.
Sorry, bye.
All right. So Suri is number three in your power rankings. Is there anything else to add about Suri?
No, just that it's incredible, given, like, the bloodbath that this season was, you know, to have lost so many legends so fast. The fact that Suri is in the finale is awesome and unlikely. You know, I think certainly I'm not sure the exact quotes on this, Rob, but I know in our Heroes versus Villains chapter of the evolution of strategy, we talked about, like, if Suri came back for a fourth round, like, how far could she really go? Certainly, I don't think you or I would have predicted that she could have made it this far.
Oh, I thought she had no chance to make the merge this season.
And things broke her way, you know, very, very luckily, where she didn't have to worry about tribal council until the merge.
She could have been the first boot.
Very easily. So we are, you know, every single episode that we got to spend with Suri was a miracle.
Yeah.
The fact that she made it to the finale, you know, really only for me, just in the same way that, you know, Sandra didn't win a third time, but she was so, you know, take charge in her time in this game. She engineered votes. She pulled things off that I feel like her stock rose. I feel like Suri's stock, if it could go higher, like for me, it went higher this season, even with the thing getting flubbed last week.
You know, it's funny just to talk about Sandra and Suri because there were so many comparisons and talk about them and if they're friends or not before the season goes. But the way that you and I described how a third win had to go for Sandra is exactly how Suri's game went in this season.
Right.
And tell me if you think that this is right, that the game that Sandra played in her third time might be what Suri was trying to do in her third time, where she's going after Tom Westman. She's
right.
going to take out the people that she identifies as the big threats. It doesn't work for her, but that was Suri's, you know, queen stays queen season.
Yeah, no, that's fun. Yeah, especially because it doesn't seem like there was a lot of love lost between the two of them coming into this season, but I think that there's lines that you could connect between the two of them for sure.
Okay, interesting. All right, so number two on your power rankings.
So it's a little bit of a coin toss for me between Sarah and Brett, but I think that they're the likeliest winners of the season. I would probably put Sarah past Brad, and my only concern...
I would.
I know she would. My concern would be, like, you know, when you try to, like, sketch out what a jury situation would be for her, like, has she burned too many bridges? Is that something that's happening? I think that there are some people out there who really respect the game, and then I think there are some people who could take things really personally. I don't know that Sheriff Don Thomas would be so psyched to vote for Sarah after learning what Sarah did in order to get her advantage. So I wonder about that stuff. But I think that Sarah and Brad has certainly had incredible image rehab this season, right? Like, you know, credit to Mario Lanza where it's due, but also on the show, like, I think that there was a lot where Brad was coming off smelling like roses.
Did that take a step back this week?
Because he was antiquing the sand into the wind.
Pick somebody else, people.
Yeah, the pepper spray. I don't know. I think that was a little bit of a regression, but I certainly understood the frustration that he's feeling. Like, he was on top of the world, and now he's kind of been in uncertain territory for the past few rounds, so he's just going to kind of let that out. It's not the best look, you know? That's not the greatest look in the world, but I still think that there's a lot of people on that jury that are Brad Culpepper fans.
Kevin, I'm interested to get your take on what was your thought on Brad coming into the season and Brad through 13 hours of Game Changers.
Yeah, you know, coming into the season, I was not a Brad fan. I mean, there were obviously, you know, you can throw in the edit and you can throw it on all the stuff from his previous season, but obviously he came in with a very bad reputation, sure. That said, I think this season did a very good job of repairing that reputation, but to me, that is Brad's reward at the end of this season. I don't think he's the number one. I don't think he's going to get it. I think the most or the smartest thing that's happened recently is once again the other players making bad choices and leaving him in when they had that vote two episodes ago. That should have been their chance to get rid of Brad Culpepper. They dropped the ball. Brad won immunity. He's probably going to win it again. And I think when you're Brad Culpepper, you're just like, you guys messed up. You should have gotten rid of me. I think he's 100% right. And his chance of winning is almost showboating that fact to the jury to be like, yeah, they really should have voted me out, and now I'm going to just win immunities to the end. I don't think that will ultimately get him the votes. If it's him against Sarah, I think Sarah gets more votes.
Well, I think that if Brad Mike Holloway is this thing, I think he wins.
Oh,
I don't know. I think
there's an argument for sure. Yeah, because that'll be impressive.
You have to look at this fourth dimensionally, Kevin. if he has done something so impressive to get to the end, then I think he's the winner.
I mean, at the same point, though, he doesn't have his arguments become like, well, I won the immunities. And it's just like, well, that's true. But Sarah also did a lot of big moves in a season called Game Changers, once again, in the meta commentary of that. And I feel like if she makes the better argument, and I do think Sarah has a better way of talking to the jury than possibly Brad does. I think
the jury does like the person who's won all the challenges to get to the end, because that person didn't conspire against them.
Right.
That person just went out there and won.
Yes.
Whereas if there are hard feelings against Sarah, then and they sit next to each other in a final three, that I think that that's an easier case for him to make, as opposed to somebody if for whatever reason, like, he could get there but didn't win the immunities down the stretch and Sarah dragged him there and it was her move.
Yes.
Right. So I think that's the real thing for me with Brad, of how many challenges can he win down the stretch? Because I think that he might be able to make an impressive resume and say, I was loyal, I won challenges, I didn't screw you over, vote for me.
Jeff Probst in the preseason, in doing his preview of all of the Game Changers, when he was summarizing his thoughts on Brad Culpepper, he said, I don't know if Culpepper can win. That would take a transformation where we got to watch him say, I'm a little too much at times, and I'm working on it. But wouldn't it be amazing? It would be amazing if Brad Culpepper won Survivor. Did anyone walk into this season thinking that Brad had a shot, let alone could get as far as he's gotten? I really don't think so. He went undrafted in the Dom and Colin draft. There's some big bucks in charity on the line because of that.
Right. He went 19th in the draft that we did during the while the season was filming.
He went last in the draft that I did with Jeff Probst. So, you know, a lot of people really, really thought that Brad had no shot here at all.
And good on him.
So even to talk about him as not just somebody who's in the final six, but somebody who is, in my opinion, in the serious conversation of who's really going to be able to win this thing, is pretty wild. It's pretty ridiculous. I certainly would not have expected that coming into the season.
That's wild. Okay. Let me ask you, Josh, what are the chances? What would you pay for Brad Culpepper in a final three to tell the jury he's a neat man? I'm a neat man.
Yeah, I would pay a lot.
I'm just a neat man.
I pay a lot. I will say I'm disappointed that he hasn't said Monica Moore this season.
I'm surprised Monica didn't say Monica Moore.
Yeah, I'm surprised by that as well. I just don't know that there is a really great third Personica supercut unless we get a lot of that in this final episode here. I'd pay good cash. I would go in on that with you, Rob. What do you want to put up? $200 to get him to say neat man?
I mean, we're getting him to say it, or am I paying you if he says it?
No.
What's the order of operations
here? We're paying to make sure that it happens because it's a wonderful thing.
We're slipping Brad money back in time at the Von Trapp Council?
Yeah. We're going to travel back in time Troy's and /J's.
Maybe
Malcolm
the best we could do is that you bring a sign to the finale and hold it up Brad is a neat man.
Yeah. All right. Well, we can get to some crafts after this.
Should they let people bring signs to the Survivor finale like a Raw show?
No, that's unpredictable. That's unpredictable. You don't know what's going to happen.
Let it happen. No, I say let it happen.
It's dangerous.
Kevin?
It's dangerous. It's dangerous.
Do you want to see signs at the Survivor finale?
I think it could be amusing, but yeah, there's a danger there. You just still have to just strategically take signs from people if they have very bad ones.
Okay.
Dangerous signs.
All right. And then number one in your power rankings is Officer Sarah.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, going back and kind of reflecting on Sarah's arc, it would be pretty crazy because she's, you know, virtually invisible for, a decent portion of the season.
Have you rewatched the season?
I didn't do the full rewatch.
Okay.
Did not do the traditional full rewatch on my way out here, which maybe says something. But I have gone and rewatched a few of these episodes a few times. And, you know, one of the things that Sarah does say early on, I think it's in that first 2 hours of the show, she's like, I'm going to be the silent assassin. You're not going to worry about me at all until it's too late. And then she goes quiet in the story for several episodes. And now she's been the loudest voice in the room for a while now, you know, for a few episodes where she's really been like Cassandra at the hub of things. You know, like she's kind of been the fulcrum vote on a lot of these votes. So I think that that there would be a narrative justification for why we didn't see her in that sort of pre-merge period of time when she was on Tavua, where that tribe was just winning. So why are you really going to feature her too heavily? She straight up says, like, you're not going to hear from me until I'm striking. And she's been striking, and ever since she started, we haven't stopped hearing from her. My question is, has she burned too many bridges with the jury? That will be interesting to see if she makes it that far. But I just think in terms of like who has been like a force on this show this season and who's in a decent game position, really nobody compares to Sarah right now.
Kevin, do you feel like she's burned too many bridges?
It's so tough because like it's both the hardest and greatest thing in Survivor is that jury. And it always depends on what jury you get, because I feel like certain juries will always respect, even burnt bridges, they'll respect good gameplay. And I think Sarah has done some good gameplay. If she can talk about it in such a way that isn't just like, well, I didn't care about you at all. But if you're able to convince the jury that gameplay is what matters, I think Sarah walks away a winner because she had good gameplay. But if you have a jury where it's bitter jury syndrome, then you, of course, you don't get the votes that I feel like sometimes that person may deserve. And it's really tough because so it comes down to that. So as much as we want to debate, I guess, Brad or Sarah, I guess more the debate is, where does the jury stand? Like, what type of jury do we think is sitting there right now?
Who do you think, if Sarah gets to the final three, is the person that really tears her a new one the most?
Well, just from the exit press, Debbie was not impressed with Sarah.
Yeah.
She's
but Debbie, back in Koh Rang, that she voted for Michelle, but I thought that she
was
really
glowing towards Aubrey beforehand.
Yeah.
So she's going to call Sarah an officer goddess.
Well that's going to be the tell. Yeah. If she comes out really guns blazing against Sarah, then she might give her her vote. But if she comes out like, Sarah, I'm so impressed with you this season. What a transformation you've made. What a great job.
Yeah.
Then we'll know that this, the BS detector's going off.
The BSDT. Yeah, I think that I don't know who's going to be the angriest, but just of the jury that exists right now, I don't think that Debbie is thrilled with Sarah. I don't think that Sierra Dawn Thomas is going to be thrilled with Sarah as soon as she finds out that Sarah voted for her on the vote where she went home. And I don't think that Ozzy's going to be too thrilled. So that's already three
people. And
don't
forget Michaela went out. Like, yeah. Like, what are you thinking, Officer Sarah?
So that's four. So
Michaela the juror could be very good. There's a lot of upside there for
I'm
Michaela,
very excited.
The juror.
I am so excited.
Yeah that'll be great. So
Slide to the side.
That's why it's a little bit of a toss-up, just because I think, like, realistically, I don't know that she's got the votes. I think she's got the screen presence. And I know, again, we've talked about resonance and it hasn't resonated with everybody, but I think that she's had the screen time. She has had, she's been a focal point in the conversations about strategy multiple times. So I think when you're just like watching that stuff, I think Sarah is the person. And also she has made the most moves, and that's probably the person that I would vote for, but who knows how these people are going to vote.
Right. Just because I would also vote for Sarah, but just because the viewer would vote doesn't mean that'd be the case.
We didn't even mention Andrea also went out of the game not loving Sarah.
Yeah, so it would really depend on who she's up against, I guess.
Yeah.
Andrea brought about her own destruction, though, as I've stated.
The shade.
Which sucks. I really like Andrea a lot, but I feel like, again, it's so weird this season because you look at a lot of the people and it's self-destructive is how a lot of the people went out in a weird way.
All right. Well, we will see how this story all plays out this Wednesday night when we get to our Survivor finale. Josh Wiggler will be there. Look for the fist bumping Josh Wiggler.
That's what I do. My arms are launching up. Maybe I should do the wiggle dance this time. I'll do the W. Form the W, and that way everyone gets to see it on national television.
Okay, so that's going to be very exciting. And then I will, with any luck, see you there.
Yeah. You're going to have a busy night, though, Rob.
Be a busy night. There'll be a lot going on, so excited for the Survivor finale.
I can't wait to see your man bun on the red carpet.
Yes.
I think that's going to be really good.
Do we have a hashtag for this?
I like big move shaming.
Big move shaming?
I think was good.
Okay. Kevin, any throw out anything?
No, I'm also a big fan of big move shaming. I feel like a lot of fun can come up with that one.
Maybe not as a practice, but...
Okay, very good. Was my Boogie Nights Theory 2 OTT?
No, I liked it. I liked it a lot. I love that movie as well.
Okay. All right.
Paul Sierra Don Thomas Anderson.
All right, we have a new replacement.
for the hashtag.
Sorry.
Okay. All right. Fantastic work. Josh, this was another season of Wiggle Room. It's going to be in the books after Thursday.
In the books. Yeah. We're, you know, it was a time. We had a time.
We definitely had a time. Yeah. And Josh and I will get into all of your questions this Thursday. You can send us your voicemails after the finale. Go to robisatwebsite.com/voicemail or 323-282-RHAP. We'll probably be recording that sometime Thursday, early afternoon, West Coast time. So sometime over the next 12 hours or so after the finale, leave us a message and we can get into what you guys had to say about everything with the Game Changers. Of course, then on Wednesday night, look for Stephen Fishback and Sophie Clark on the Know It Alls for live coverage. And then we'll have exit interviews for you guys on Thursday. Kevin, you have any special finale plans?
Not too much. I might actually have to work late that day, which is rough because I'm
so nobody. Yeah. Nobody text Kevin.
Yeah, please don't. Please don't.
Or just inundate him with fake spoilers.
That would actually be fun. Just throw out things because this season has been so unpredictable. Careful. I wouldn't know what's real.
Careful what you wish for.
Yeah. Well, now you can't get spoiled if we're saying put out fake spoilers. Yeah. So that'd be exciting.
Yeah, but somebody's gonna give him like the real spoiler, and I guess you won't know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anything is believable now.
You've just become spoil proof.
Yes.
If you got inundated with fake spoilers, you know that would be fantastic.
I think I would still just like go mental, like trying to think like what was the real one.
Yeah.
Okay. Keep that away from me.
But this is the game changer to me.
Just opened pretty wide. Yeah.
Boy, if you could just get a bunch of people to send you fake spoilers, you could never get spoiled.
Yeah.
Wow, you just defeated the internet.
Interesting. Okay.
Let's mull that over the summer. We got some time.
Okay. Josh, of course, you do such outstanding work with Antonio Mazzaro on the Leftovers post-show recap.
Yeah. As you're listening to this, it's very likely that Antonio and I are recording our podcast because we're not going to be able to do it on Sunday night this week. So we're going to drop that hopefully by Monday evening, talking about the third to last episode of the Leftovers over at Post-Show Recaps. If you are not subscribed to that podcast already, you can do so at postshowrecaps.com/leftovers iTunes.
Right. And the really exciting thing about the Leftovers final season is that everybody in that universe is just sitting around waiting for Advantage Geddon to come.
Yes, that's right.
Everybody really has like some different, what does this mean? Is this a good thing? Yeah. Is this a bad thing when all the advantages get played? So some people are depressed.
People are.
Yeah. So it's very tricky.
Yeah.
Of course, Better Call Saul recaps there as well. Myself and Antonio Mazzaro on Post Show Recaps. All right. So great stuff, and be on the lookout for why Andrea and Michaela lost with David Bloomberg coming up next. Subscribe to the podcast, robisatwebsite.com/iTunes. Of course, you could follow Josh Wigler on Twitter at Round Howard, and Kevin, Josh gave out his Twitter earlier. What's your handle?
It is at Kev Mahadeo on Twitter.
At Kev Mahadeo. So be on the lookout for that with the fake spoilers. I'm at Rob Sisternino. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye. Bye.